You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to celebrate an anniversary so big that the folks from New Jersey are setting up a celebration. We are talking about The Sopranos, the 20th anniversary. Can you believe it? 20 years ago on January 10th, 1999, The Sopranos premiered. And basically, the TV world has never been the same. A lot of people rate it as one of the best television series of the last 50 years. It's pretty, you know, amazing to think about. And we're going to talk all about it on the show. We got a great crew here to talk about it. But before we do that, got to introduce my co-host for this week, the man, the myth, the legend, the man of howdy himself, the one who likes to say bada bing, bada boom, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
That's right. You don't even need a bada bing. You just have a howdy.
I don't have a bada bing. I've actually never seen The Sopranos. So yes, unfortunately, I will not be participating in the main topic this week. But I'm still here. You know, I still want to show up and get my paycheck. I know it's a great show, and it's one of those things that I do want to get around to at some point.
I think you should watch it sometime, and a lot of things that have come since have, you know, basically The Sopranos to thank for it. Even things like Game of Thrones that we watch and has The Sopranos, surprisingly enough, to, you know, be thankful for, at least that genre of television and the way, you know, bringing you into that and not ever getting used to seeing and getting comfortable with a main character because, you know, they might not be around much longer.
You're right. It was a huge show. It's one of the, like when HBO started getting interested in doing original TV shows or, you know, programming series, it was like one of their biggest hits early on. And, I'm always surprised that, I know there's talk about it every once in a while, but I'm surprised there's not been any sort of spinoff or anything like that from it. So,
we'll be talking about that during the segment.
Awesome. Awesome. But yeah, so at some point I will. So cool that you guys are doing it. So that's awesome. But yes, I will go on the other side of the station and occupy myself in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Just don't let JD out of the airlock. That's all we ask.
I'll try.
Ooh, that's almost frightening. That's almost frightening to think about. But, you know, we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. And, you know, definitely tell us what your thoughts on The Sopranos were. Did you watch it? Did you like it? Was it must-see TV for you? A lot of people was, you know, for 7 seasons, Sopranos came, you know, every Sunday night. And sometimes we used to have to wait a year or two, kind of like Game of Thrones now. But, you know, sometimes you just had to do it. And there was writer strikes in the middle. We had 9/11 right in the middle of the series. And they definitely took that head on. And so it was pretty interesting to see what about it and everything. So definitely got a lot to talk about. We definitely, you know, want to thank everyone who's been supporting the Patreon. Cannot say enough to everyone who has been supporting us week after week and such. And you could also become a patron of the ESO Network for as little as 25 cents a week. You too can help support the ESO Network. Doesn't take much. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. Pretty straightforward, folks. Can't ask for more than that. And let's start 2019 off with a bang, you know, by helping us out with our Patreon. We'd really appreciate it. All right, let's get started with this week's rants and raves. And Mr. Mike, you actually have a movie review for us.
I do. I'm still getting caught up. This is not a new movie. I still am getting caught up on 2018. I realized when I was putting together my list of movies, my favorite movies from 2018 a few weeks ago, that I didn't really see a lot of movies. So I'm still trying to get caught up on some of the movies that came out last year. And the movie that I saw this past weekend was a remake of The Star is Born. It is starring Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. And I don't usually see a lot of dramas. It's not because I don't like them. I like melodramas a lot, actually. I just don't usually get to the theater to see them. And so this is cool. I have actually never seen, this is the fourth time that this movie has been made. 1934, 1950, 1935, 1954, and 1970 something, I think. So, all right. So it's been made four times. And unfortunately, I have not seen any of the other versions of this. So I'm going to try to correct that at some point. But so this is the first time I've seen the story. And I didn't know what the story was going to be. I was under the impression it was one thing, and I was totally surprised at actually what the story is. And so I went in kind of with not a lot of knowledge about what this was going to be. I do like Bradley Cooper. I remember seeing him in, I think I first saw him when he was on Alias for a few years, the first few seasons. And I liked him in that okay. But he's become a huge star, so much in fact that this is his baby. It seems like, he's the director. He's a co-writer. He's a producer. He's the star and he sings his own songs in it. I mean, he does a lot of things in this movie. I mean, this is really his baby. And also of course, you know, it's, Lady Gaga, who I do like. I do, appreciate her work. I know a lot of people keep saying that they're surprised that she can sing and she surprises them, but, I've always considered her a very, very talented performer. So, I was keen to see it because I like both of them. And, I'm not going to give a spoiler review. So I'm not going to go into the, everything that happens in the movie, but I really liked it a lot. I thought it would have easily, had I seen this in 2018, I would have easily, this would have been my top 10 easily and probably my top 5. It's a solid movie. It's really good. The story is incredible. And it really, like, I think because it's directed by an actor, you get a lot of really great actor moments. There's a lot of scenes in this movie that you can tell that Bradley and Gaga are just having a what they call like an actor moment, where yes, the lines that they're saying are written, but the emotions, like, they're really putting it all on the line. They are really just having these like raw scenes. And I don't usually see those in movies. A lot of the movies that I see don't have those. They're not really, like I said, emotional melodramas. So this was quite refreshing. And I do give a lot of credit to Bradley and Gaga for, for their bravery and putting themselves out there like this. Because obviously, if this movie failed, they'd look really silly, you know. And so that's always a risk. But I thought they both did a great job. The rest of the cast is great too. Sam Elliott is in this and he's great always. And that's the other thing about Bradley Cooper's performance is that he adopts like a Sam Elliott-esque accent in this. I mean, they play brothers. So he doesn't talk like you normally see. Like, he doesn't talk like a Rocket Raccoon, which is what you know.
Oh, Bradley Cooper, man.
Right. The first couple of minutes I was like, whoa, that's not how Bradley Cooper talks. That's really weird. But within like a few minutes, I was completely sold. I think it helped him, separate this character from the actor. So I wasn't constantly going, oh, it's Bradley Cooper. It's instead I was invested in him as a character. And I just, like I said, I really like it. I really recommend it. I went with Michelle and, it was actually her idea. She really wanted to see it. So we went. Unfortunately, I will say that, she did not like it as much as I did. She thought it was a good movie, but she did find that it dragged in parts. It is 2 hours and 16 minutes. So it is long. It's not the longest version of A Star is Born though. I think, some of the others are, longer. So I like the story and I'm really keen. I know the first two times the movie was filmed, like the 34 version and then the 50s version with Judy Garland and James Mason. I know that those take place in the film industry. Like it involves like a young up and coming film star. Whereas the Barbra Streisand, Kris Kristofferson version and this one tackle the music industry. So, and it's kind of interesting, you know, to learn about. I also felt like their thoughts and the way they depicted the industry felt legit. Like sometimes you can see movies and TV shows or whatever, and they depict the music industry or the movie industry, and you're like, yeah, that's not the way things really work. I'm not saying I'm not saying this is a documentary, but it felt like there were moments that it felt like this was like a real journey. And I think because you have someone like Gaga playing the main part too, I think that she could lend some legitimacy to some of the scenes where it's like, she knows that this, you know, some of this,
she's been there.
Yeah, exactly. She's been there. And Bradley Cooper can sing. I mean, it's some of the songs are really good.
So like, it's not him lip singing or anything.
No. He really sings and he's good. Like, that's the other thing. The music, sometimes when you watch like, you know, movies where the guy's supposed to be a rock star and then like they sing the song, you're like, that's a lame song. That song would never make it. And like, it's just kind of like, it's a big chart. Like it's my big hit. And you're like, that would never be a hit. But in this, there are legit like songs that are really good. So I think a lot of people know Shallow, which is Lady Gaga's song that she co-wrote. And I know that that got a Golden Globe. I expect it'll also get an Oscar as best song. I would not be surprised if this movie wins the Oscar for best picture. It seems like it's got all the right elements to be an Oscar winner. The movie has won an Oscar before, so there's that. So I'm not saying it's it will win, but it should be a contender. I think. I did really like it a lot. So, and I know Mike, you haven't seen it, correct?
I have not seen it. It's been on my list for quite some time to actually see, and it's been interesting because, you know, I'm. Like you, I like a lot of Gaga's music. I'm not, you know, one of those people who would go see her in concert or anything, but I respect her. I think
you don't want to deal with what does she call her fans? The little monsters?
Yes. And then some. So no, I have no interest in that, but it's like, I respected her creativity and how she got to this point. And I think it was a stroke of genius. She has an amazing voice, one of the most amazing talents probably of this generation, with her, how powerful of her voice, how amazing of a marketing blitz she did by standing out to do all the weird stuff and to get herself noticed. And now she's doing the things that she wants to do. She's doing the ballots with, you know, Tony Bennett. She's doing, you know, these movies and becoming, you know, a force in Hollywood. I don't think this is the last we're going to see her on the big screen.
No, I don't think so either. Not after this. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets more roles. And she seems to be kind of a discerning person as far as what projects she picks to be involved in. So I expect it'll be interesting to see when we see her next on the screen. But I did. And like you, I remember when I first heard like her first pop song that was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like a big hit like a years ago. And I like a lot of people were like, oh, here's another, you know, pop singer that's just here today, gone tomorrow. But when it's a catchy tune and, you know, and all that, but I didn't think much more than that. But when she spent, 3 or 4 years working on projects with Tony Bennett, that impressed me a lot because A, she could hang with him and she could sing and they were great together. And B, that's not like, I'm sure her agents were like, this is stupid. Don't do this. Like, you're hanging around with this old guy for years. You're derailing your pop music career. You know how much money we could be making? You know, instead she decided to do what she wanted to do, which was make some great music with a legend, really. And that really, I respected that a lot.
Exactly.
Because that's that, you know, you can't tell me that any, like, her agents or her publicity people were like really in favor of that. You know what I mean? like that's that would be like, for most people, that would be like death, you know, but you know, she did it. And, you know, they did some great stuff together. So, and then her albums, like I said, and she, like, you know, she does, songs that I think are, she makes sure that they're relevant. They're not just pop bubblegum stuff. She talks about issues that, you know, strongly that she believes in. So I think that's, she's a good egg. Let's put it that way. She's, I have a lot more, I know that she's been compared to Madonna a lot, and I have a lot more respect for her than I ever have for Madonna. I'm not a big Madonna fan.
So. Oh, she's such a better singer and such a better performer than Madonna ever was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so I, like, bottom line is, you know, I think even if you don't care for her, like if you hate her, then don't see this movie, because I don't think this is going to win you over. But if you're open, if you're like, I could like her one way or another, I think go ahead, see this movie, because I think it might change your mind about her. Or if you already like her, see it because, you know, you like her and this is really good. She's really good in it. So, and I have a lot of respect for Bradley Cooper. This obviously was a project that meant a lot to him. So much that he directed, wrote. I mean, this is his baby. And he put a lot of himself on the line here. And that's, you don't see that kind of bravery with actors a lot these days. So, I give a lot of credit to him. I didn't think, you know, when I was watching him on Alias all those years ago, this is not the path that I expected him to go on. So good for him. And, I think it's a great piece of work.
No, very much so. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. And, you know, I definitely will probably go end up seeing it. Heck, I don't have anything to do for the Super Bowl, so maybe then I will.
Yeah, I remember it. I know it's not the kind of movie that we usually talk about, like, we don't usually talk about like melodramas and stuff like that, but I, you know, I did want to point out that it's a good movie, and yeah, I love a good melodrama. I'm a big melodrama fan. I don't talk about it a lot on the show because we just don't, you know, cover a lot of that stuff, but I love, you know, I watched a lot of Turner Classic Movies stuff, and you know,
yes,
back in the day, I used to be, you know, addicted to the soap operas and all that kind of stuff. And I even took one of my film courses when I was on melodrama, because I thought I've always thought that was a underrated and sort of ignored legitimate form of movie making, and a very powerful way of movie making and telling stories that I didn't think got a lot of serious credit. You know, most people look at melodramas and think, oh, they're just the stories. They're just the soaps. Who cares about all that stuff? It's just over the top. But I think, you know, done the right way, they're really powerful and they're really emotional, and they can really touch people. And that's what this movie does. And, I'm a big fan. So.
Of course. I agree completely. All right. I got something I really want to talk to you guys about. And Mikey, you can join in on this conversation a little bit too. I basically, you know, the segment's called Rants and Raves. And we've been, you know, raving a lot and talking, you know, a lot lately about personal life stuff, personal histories, stuff like that. Or we do mini movie reviews and stuff like that, or talk about TV shows. And I think that's great and everything, but I have something I want to rant about. Yes, folks, it's been a while. So, you know, sit back and relax. We got a good one here. And it's not something we've actually bitched and moaned about on the show multiple different times. And it's about basically the amount of TV commercials that are shown on different shows. It almost seems like there's more commercials now than ever on a lot of these shows. Or, it, you know, if you have a show that's on 30 minutes, a good 12 minutes of that is commercials. Or if you have a hour-long TV show, a good, I would want to say 18 minutes, almost 20 minutes of it is TV commercials. And one of the worst victims of it this year was Doctor Who. And, you know, we've talked about it on Earth Station Who, talked about the new season with Jodie as the new doctor. And, you know, we know our feelings on that if you listen to that podcast. But one of the biggest bitches that we've had on that show was about the commercials. And it felt a lot of times, you know, especially since it's a British TV show, which isn't made to have commercial breaks, you got, you know, a lot of these shows that you watch it and you go, oh, what's going to happen? And boom, commercial break. Or this, you know, right in the almost mid-sentence in some points with Doctor Who, it felt like they were throwing in commercials. And they felt like they were drowning that show in commercials. A little bit of fresh air, though, was I've been watching since the beginning of the year, The Return of the Orville, which is an amazing show. It's more Star Trek than even Star Trek is nowadays in a lot of ways. And Mike, you and I have talked about the show in the past, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. I watch it. I'm current with it.
Okay. And one of the things, though, that we've both have noticed on it is at the beginning of the show, this episode of The Orville is brought to you with limited commercials, which is pretty darn amazing because that shows that they have a lot of faith in the show and the quality and that, you know, they want people to watch the stories and such. And it's just, why can't they do that with more programming on, you know, BBC America, on, you know, so FX or AMC? Because I know people who watch The Walking Dead have complained about that too, about the amount of commercials that are just blasting away. It makes me not want to watch a lot of these things live anymore. You know, I know a lot of people stream, a lot of people now DVR and, you know, be able to watch and fast forward through the commercials. But I've noticed, like, if for some reason the DVR is not working or something and I want to watch on demand, they throw commercials in that you can't fast forward. And it's just one of those annoying situations that, you know, it just gets to me after a while. And, you know, it ruins a lot of good shows. I started watching about a couple months ago, Judy and I started watching the show called The Americans. And it's a show that's on FX. We're late to the game, but, you know, there's, I think, 7 seasons of it or 6 seasons of it. And we're going to, you know, slowly get caught up on it as, you know, between new shows and shows around it. And we enjoy it, though. And it's just, you know, seeing, you could see on the show where they do break for commercials. And there's a lot of commercials breaks in these, and it's just ridiculous because a show like this is almost meant for something like HBO or something like what we're talking about later in it, The Sopranos. Can you imagine if they would have put commercials in it? That would have just ruined the show, and a lot of times it does ruin it. And it's just a bitch I had to get off my chest and felt like it's a gripe. And, you know, the better to gripe about things than keep it inside, as I like to say. My new motto for 2019. So you might actually hear more bitching from me this year than before because I kept a lot in. Oh, did I keep a lot in. So got a lot to talk about and we got so much stuff to do. And, you know, there's just a lot of cool stuff to be talking about and to waste my time with TV commercials while I'm trying to watch quality programming. It's, you know, it's real frustrating. So we'll have to see where it goes, blah, blah, blah. One other thing with TV I want to bring up real quick. And Mikey, what's your thoughts so far? Because they are about to wrap up the 3rd season of The Good Place. And I think that is only has one or two more episodes left and it's done for this year.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I still love it. It's still one of my favorite shows on the planet. One of my favorite shows maybe ever. And they keep upping the game. Like the last episode that they aired, the last couple they've introduced, what they're doing now is really, I think, interesting. And it's something that I haven't heard a lot of shows or whatever discuss. So I think they're really like, this is, you know, it's a comedy, but, and it's a smart show, but they also make sure that every single episode has some sort of ethical thing in it. And it just makes it so intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's one of the things. It's a show that makes you think and make you look at things a little differently. And it's just a lot of fun. And we've done an episode on The Good Place.
I don't think that'll be the last episode we do on The Good Place.
No, I don't think so either. I have a feeling we might do a catch-up of it after season 4.
It wouldn't be a bad idea.
A good idea to do. So that way we'd have two more seasons to talk about. So it should be a lot of fun. And definitely, folks, if you haven't watched it, for me, it started really slow with season 1. It was just like, a little predictable, a little bit of, you know, comedy, blah, 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 sitcom, blah, blah, blah. But then they pull the rug out of you at the end of season 1 that makes you go, holy shirt. And then, you know, it's pretty darn awesome. And after that, it just goes off and it's a roller coaster, folks. And it is a lot of fun to do. So definitely check out The Good Place. I can't endorse it more than enough. Definitely do. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment, and we are going to be talking all about The Sopranos. See you then.
Woke up this morning, got yourself a gun. Mama always said you'd be the chosen one. She said, one in a million, you got to burn the shine.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. First up, we've got a new movie called Serenity. Unfortunately, this is not another story in the Firefly universe, so don't get your hopes up for that. But it does have a good cast, so there's that, including Matthew McConaughey, Anne Hathaway, and Diane Lane, among others. This one's a thriller about a man who gives tours on his boat near a tropical island. Sounds like a pretty good life, right? That's when his ex-wife shows up and asks for help. And things get dark and twisted pretty quickly. Next, we have a family fantasy movie called The Kid Who Would Be King. This one's about an ordinary boy who goes on an extraordinary adventure after finding the magical sword in the stone Excalibur, and he teams up with a certain famous wizard named Merlin. I saw some previews for this one and thought, well, it looked kind of fun. It also looked like a movie like, man, this could go really bad and could be a flop. But actually, it's getting some really good reviews so far. Critics are calling it charming and family friendly, so it might be a good way to get out of the house this weekend if you're feeling cooped up with the cold weather and take your family and a big bucket of popcorn to the movies. On DVD this week, we have one of my favorite movies of 2018, so I'm super excited that it's coming to DVD and Blu-ray, and that's First Man. And that's the retelling of Neil Armstrong and the Apollo 11 story. I just absolutely love this movie, from Ryan Gosling's portrayal to the unique way that the film approached the events and the emotions and gives you a little peek at the man behind the scenes. This is just such a gorgeously shot movie. It was emotionally moving. I absolutely loved it. If you did not get a chance to see it, I highly, highly recommend it as a rental. Also on DVD, we have The Hate U Give, which is based on the award-winning young adult novel that covers some important racial issues, and also Johnny English Strikes Again. That's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
The Pro Wrestling Roundtable is a podcast for wrestling fans by wrestling fans. Every Monday, you can get your wrestling fix with news, interviews, reviews, wrestling talk from the past, present, and future. So much wrestling talk, even Bonesaw McGraw can't resist. Available on ProWrestlingRoundtable.com, iTunes, and the ESO Network. Come on and listen.
Daddy! Dad!
How are you feeling now?
Good. Fine. Back at work.
By the time I was a kid, I knew I'd run the family business.
What line of work are you in?
Waste management consultant.
It's a
gift from Tony Soprano.
Are you in the mafia?
This is overdue.
Am I in the what?
Like my uncle ran it. Like my father ran it. I'd run it.
You said you were in waste management.
Jimmy says hello from hell, you f-
environment.
One of gangland's leaders died late this afternoon.
The times have changed.
Nobody knows who's running things anymore.
Why don't we call this what it is? A shakedown.
What do you think Dad does for a living?
Waste management.
Sometimes you're so naive.
That is a power vacuum at the top.
Your boys were warned.
I run my crew my way.
Problems finding good help at the bottom.
Oh, is that him?
Now that would be some coincidence if it wasn't, wouldn't it?
And the feds are always there lurking. And believe me, things ain't much better at home.
Meadow?
You think I got a brain tumor?
Well, we're gonna find out.
What a bedside manner. I mean, encourage it.
Kill me now. Take the carving knife and stab me. Here. Here. Now, please.
So where does that leave me?
Do you feel depressed?
The mob.
Hi, Jack. Bye, Jack.
It's no bed of roses. Well, sometimes it is.
What are you so afraid's going to happen?
I don't know.
The Sopranos.
This is Scarface, final scene. Say hello to my little friend.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now we are here for the main topic, and we are talking all about The Sopranos, which just celebrated its 20th anniversary. God, that makes me feel so frippin' old.
I'm so old.
I know. It's crazy. Yep. January 10th, 1999.
Wow.
Can you believe that? That Sopranos ran for 7 seasons, and it was great show. It only had 86 episodes though. And
right.
HBO, right. You know, this almost is what put the true series into HBO. There was some smaller comedy series and some other things, but this literally brought to the forefront, and it was the brainchild of David Chase, and we'll be talking all about it. And
now it was post Wire, right? I was double checking myself.
I think it was after the Wire.
It was after the Wire.
It was after the Wire. It was also after Homicide: Life on the Street
and
all that type of stuff. Exactly, and we have a great crew to talk about it tonight. So. Mike G didn't really know anything about The Sopranos. He was too cheap to get HBO at the time. So it's just me, and we got some great guests, though, to sit in with us. Of course, first, Will Nix is here.
Hi, guys.
Want to tell everyone real quick about yourself?
I'm Will Nix. I'm a panelist at DragonCon. I am also a co-host of The Geeky Side and a teacher here in Georgia.
Exactly. And I've done panels with Will in the past, mm-hmm. and it's always great to have him. And, you know, I feel very fortunate to talk to him tonight.
Glad to be here.
And of course, Rob Levy is here. Welcome back to the show, Rob.
Hey, how are you?
Good. And you want to tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I do a lot of pop culture writing for various sites and needcoffee.com. I do a podcast with them and also The Unique Geek and a couple other things around town. A lot of freelance writing out in pop culture land. So it's easiest to follow me on Facebook to kind of figure out where everything's going, because such is the life of a freelancer. I do panels at various conventions, and I've hosted a radio show here in St. Louis for 24 years now called Juxtaposition. It's on Wednesday nights. If you go to kdhx.org, you can get information on that. And I'm a huge sort of movies, pop culture, TV, music book guy, if that helps sort of put that in the proper niche of why the hell I'm here. Mm-hmm.
But you're also a mainstay at Dragon Con, you know.
Oh, great. Mainstay's the benevolent word for Dragon Con for old.
You know, yes.
We're all old here now, my friend.
Yes.
We're all getting the gray in our hair. We could tell. You know,
I don't have hair.
Those of us who have hair.
Oh, I do. It's just cloaked.
And speaking of mainstays, somebody who hasn't been on the show in quite some time, we've decided to open the airlock, and JD is back on the show. Welcome, sir.
Howdy. Yeah, he's not on here, so I had to represent.
Of course, you're wearing the straw hat, I see. Very awesome.
Yes. Wow, it's nice to be back on the station. been hanging out in that airlock for so long that I was starting to lose track of, well, reality, really. So,
well, that, you know, Bobby Nash has been giving me reports on you because, you know, he hangs out with you sometimes over there. And, you know, some people think he left the show. Nobody ever really leaves the show. So it's pretty awesome. It's great to have you back. So what have you been up to since last we talked to you?
Well, basically just living the geek life and raising the kids. And we started playing Dungeons and Dragons with my daughter and stepdaughter, and it's been pretty awesome.
That is awesome. That's cool. I'm glad you're, you know, bringing up the next generation of geeks.
Yeah, because, well, my daughter, she was absolutely going to be a geek from birth no matter what. But yeah, she, a couple of years ago, started showing a lot of interest in the fantasy genre, and she found out what D&D was, and she said, oh, you know, I want to play it at some point, and now we are, so.
You, I'm sure you went when she was in the crib. This is a 12-sided die.
You're not wrong about that.
First pacifier right there, buddy.
Exactly. Oh, that is awesome.
Choking hazards.
Well, it's great to have you all back on the show. And let's jump in. Both feet. David Chase basically, you know, took a big chance. He had been a big fan of gangster movies and shows and, you know, different stories like the old 1960s Untouchables and, you know, then, you know, other things. And he also then became a show writer, and he worked on like Kolchak the Night Stalker and Rockford Files and some pretty classic stuff. And then he had in mind he proposed it back, I think all the way back in 97 to do The Sopranos.
Wow.
And The Sopranos is not your typical gangster story.
Gosh, no.
And that's what made it really awesome, you know, coming to you, you know, from the very first, you know, episode, you're introduced not only to, you know, Tony Soprano, who is the leader of this New Jersey gang. And, you know, technically, he wasn't even at the beginning of it. He had his crew, but he wasn't even the leader.
No, he was just kind of like a local boss.
Yeah, exactly.
He's struggling for position.
Exactly. Uncle Junior.
Yep.
And so it was pretty amazing. And, you know, it caught my eye right away, you know, hearing about it. I'll be the first one to admit it. I did not see the first season live. I had to watch it on disc. Because, you know, I had heard about the show coming on, but I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, great. You know, they're taking on, you know, from Goodfellas you know, Casino and stuff like that. But, you know, but then from everyone who had seen it was blown away. And I power watched it, I think, over 3 days. I watched the first season. And it was just so worth it.
Well, my initial run was this summer. I put it off for so long. Oh, I'll watch it. I mean, you know, I was watching all these other things. Casino, Goodfellas, I was kind of in a mood. So I decided to watch the series, and it just blew me away on how each season is pretty much a film. I mean, this 8.5-hour, 10-hour film, and you get into it, and it's a family drama. It's not a gangster show. It's not this. It just has those elements. It's kind of like the setting, a family drama in Jersey during, you know, in a mobster family. And so I really got fascinated with the level of writing on keeping it at that instead of focusing on the shootouts and the, you know, and the violence, the drug violence, things like that.
No, I totally could see that. And that was one of the things, because you had Tony's family. And when I say Tony's family, I don't mean just, you know, the nuclear family, because you had Carmella, you had AJ, and you had his daughter.
Meadow.
Soprano. Yep. And it was funny because they were little kids when it first started.
Oh my gosh, yes. Especially AJ. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And it was just, it was really awesome to see how they grew throughout the series. And, but you also had Tony's mother, you had Uncle Junior, and they literally kept it in the family.
And his cousin. I mean, you know.
Oh, very much so. You had all these different members.
Yep.
So it was actually pretty cool. And, you know, because Christopher.
Christopher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So you had Christopher. But it was interesting because, you know, what about you guys? You know, what drew you to this? Because it wasn't your typical mobster show.
Well, okay. I mean, part of it. Okay. My genetics. I'm half Italian. So some of the family was praising the show, even though, as far as I know, nobody in my family was in the mob. I could see some of the stereotypes.
Nudge, yeah.
Let's put it this way. If they were, nobody told me about it, and that's good.
We're keeping him out.
Exactly. but, as soon as I started watching the show, because somebody in the family had HBO, so, you know, I started watching it over there, and I was struck by some of the Italian stereotypes were there for, you know, like the behavior and everything. But what really drew me to it was how much these people felt like real people. And even though I didn't know anybody who lived like this, you know, in these situations.
In New Jersey?
Huh? No, I mean,
in New Jersey?
I didn't know anybody who had any, you know, I didn't know anybody who lived a life of violence like this. It was the personal moments on the show that really got me how much these people, they felt like people that you could have known. I mean, they were all multi-dimensional characters. Even the supporting characters on the show all added a lot of depth to it. And then after like an episode or two, I was completely galvanized by Tony Soprano. James Gandolfini was dynamite on the screen.
From the very first thing. Before that, the only thing I had ever seen him in was Get Shorty.
Yeah. Yeah. I found fascinating with it is that things like taking his daughter to college, that episode where he takes Meadow to college and is trying to find a place, and he's also at the time trying to kill this guy that has ratted the family out so many years ago. And how,
yeah, he recognized the car sales.
Yeah, they recognized the car sales. And he's like, I've got to, and he's still just taking, you know, Meadow to college. But I'm also going to kill this guy over here because I owe him. And he's been selling books. He's been doing all this stuff. And I finally found him. You know, he's going to get that guy.
I really liked, I was like a lot of you guys, I sort of jumped into it late. I knew somebody who was really, really into it, and they happened to have them all. So I basically just binge watched half the first season one day and the rest of it the second. And then I was a little behind. I didn't have HBO. So after it aired, I jumped on it, but I managed to get all the way through them. And what I thought was really interesting about it is sort of when it came out, it was after The Wire. It was after all those shows you guys had sort of mentioned. And people sort of wanted, they had the black and white. They had the gritty, the grimy. Now they wanted the sort of gray. Mm-hmm. I think they wanted the flip side of that a little bit. And they didn't want a person to root for necessarily the mafia, but you ended up sort of
go Tony go.
Feeling very, yeah, you felt sort of very dirty. I mean, the thing I thought was interesting about it is you felt very sort of dirty about. You're like, wow, I'm really paying attention to this guy and everything that he's doing, and I shouldn't be. And you're drawn in by this, you know, it's sort of like you don't want to be around the bad kids at school, but you end up being around them. So you kind of felt like after the first season, sort of like you had to sort of step back and kind of think about where's my head at with this. Okay. So I thought that was interesting with it because you're in a different, from watching a TV show, you're in a different headspace in terms of having your head psychologically invested in it. You had a hero and for the most part, a cast it was sort of countercast to all the other shows on television at the time. Nobody was like, hey, this person is our sex symbol, or this is our funny guy. Right. Or it was all pretty much really down in the earth TV actors. And then you had Little Steven. You're like, where did this come from? Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. First time I saw that Little Steven Van Zandt was, was on it. And he was just like, what, you know, and playing Silvio.
Yeah.
Like Tony's right hand man.
Well, also on the same note of how progressive the show was for its time. I mean, thinking it's late '90s or early aughts with mental health and how Tony had to struggle with his mental health and how the family reacted to that and him going and seeking help and having actual depression and anxiety issues. You know, one of the triggers to the, you know, of all these family changes was his panic attacks. And I mean, that wasn't something you saw on television at all then.
No, not at
and
all.
And as someone who has suffered anxiety and panic attacks for, you know, 35 some odd years, it was really actually cool to see them handle it in a positive way, but at least addressing that this was an issue for everybody.
Well, the interesting thing about that was, especially with somebody in the mob going to see a therapist,
right,
and how he had to keep Dr. Malfoy under wraps, because if the mob found out about it, or the government found out about it, she'd either be taken into custody or killed.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they were not afraid on this show to kill off characters.
It was
a matter of don't really get attached to many of these characters.
It was the pre Game of Thrones.
Exactly. Yeah. And the thing about that was, this was the first series that I watched where I really felt that, you know, do not get attached to anybody.
Yeah, hey, anyone could die.
There was a couple times I thought even they were going to kill off Tony.
I was certain that was going to happen, like season 4, season 5. Are they bringing the show back? Especially when there were some issues with the writers, things like that were going on. Like, are they just going to end it now? Is Tony gone? Yeah, so.
Exactly. Or even the time when Uncle Junior shot Tony in the stomach.
Yep.
And it was that they had that whole Flash, you know, fantasy episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so brilliantly done. Like, if Tony had a normal life.
Yeah, I can't think of a show beforehand except for maybe, you know, one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where you killed off a main character so quickly. And, you know, you just wiped out somebody as if it was nothing. As if it was nothing. Almost treated like it was nothing.
Well,
but then the thing that they did, too, that was interesting is right after they killed somebody off, they brought the a person sort of elevated up in the cast that you didn't expect to be. Suddenly somebody you're like, that guy? And that was really kind of interesting to see how sort of these sort of originally small background incidental characters, it's almost like, you know, a thunderstorm. Like, you hear the thunderstorm off in the distance and the thunder gets louder and louder as it gets closer to you. It's kind of like that as TV. I hope that didn't sound too weird. But it was kind of like that. You have characters that, oh, this guy's, you know, just basically an underling. And then later you're like, hey, wait a minute.
Are you describing Junior's, you know, body man who later becomes Tony's brother-in-law? I mean, that's a perfect example.
That's a great example. There's a lot of examples you can use, but that is a perfect example.
I mean, you think this guy has a one-off shot. We'll see him maybe once or twice. Next thing you know, he's a lead on the show.
Well, and even, you know, even Meadow to a certain extent.
Yes.
It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, things like the dynamic between, like, Meadow and her dad would be, I think, the groundwork of things later that you'd see in, like, The Americans with, like, the kid dealing with the parent and what they do. So a lot of the stuff The Sopranos did 20 years later, there's elements of that that have been sort of brought into the new show.
Especially like House of Cards.
Oh, very much so. And it's interesting that you brought up The Americans, because I just started watching that probably about two, 3 weeks ago. And I've just made it through the first season.
Let me know when you're done.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's just amazing. And I see a lot of similarities in that show to The Sopranos, though.
And from a technical standpoint, the way the stories unfolded, the way it handled with linear time and moved around was really great. And the thing that I loved about it is that you got rid of Junior and you got rid of his mother, and the show just, without skipping a beat, moved on to other things. It was kind of a different show. And you could tell, oh my gosh, the writers have to do a lot of adjusting and fiddling around here.
They'd bring them, like, Junior would just never really go away, though. You know, it was like that. Well, Junior's out of the picture, but he's not. Or we'd bring somebody like Steve Buscemi comes in at that point and plays the cousin who's, you know, getting out. And just the craziness.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, exactly. I think that's the other. And that's the thing, though, also, is you could always know when they brought a brand new character in that, oh, I wonder who's going to betray Tony this season. You know,
it's the new guy.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It was always pretty obvious with that.
But also, it's one of the, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt anyone, but one of the most fascinating things, it's one of the first pre and post 9/11 shows to stay on the air.
Yes.
And how it really impacted the show and how they transitioned.
Well, exactly. They handled it really well.
Very well.
Well, especially it tied in because they were right across the river from New York City.
And also the relationship with the FBI was just fascinating in that. As if, you know, oh, we know it's a cat and mouse game, but now it's more serious.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting too is that it did sort of, I thought it was interesting that, like, here's a sort of immigrant family that came over to America and started doing illegal activities, suddenly has a different sort of immigrant group do things that are way more heinous than what they do. And sort of they put their stamp of morality on, you know, you have the FBI and their stamp of morality. Then you have the mafia world and their sort of stamp of morality. And then this like extremist group. And they're, so you have these like sort of, you know,
I almost laugh because
crescendo.
Right. It almost reminded me of the Rocketeer.
Oh yeah.
That's, you know what I'm talking about? The scene where the Italian mob's attacking the Germans and going, "Hey guys, you know, we don't like them, but we hate them more. You know, we're Americans at least." Yeah.
It's just, and I thought that was an interesting way to make people think about sort of that 9/11 world that we were all sort of living in. I thought that was really, really interesting. And you know what? The fact that that got sort of thrown together the way it did, it doesn't seem like it. You know, it was so well executed. And I think a lot of that stems from Chase working in things like Rockford Files and some of these other shows that he worked on that sort of drew from contemporary events and put them in their shows. And I think you have him having his sort of meat hooks in that stuff really allowed him to sort of pivot very easily on the show. And in a completely different sort of way of that, the New York Jets and the way they have, you know, the coach of the Jets just comes on and like how this football team and how they're doing in real time is like in the show. And I thought that was kind of, you know, it's light. It was a nice sort of brevity moment. But again, it's a nice way to take the contemporary and parallel it along with what they're doing. And I think by doing that, it really amplified sort of the domesticity of it in terms of like the family and the friends. It's like, you know, they don't just sit around at a table, eat pasta, talk about who they're going to kill. They talk about, you know, football and horse racing. And it was kind of weird.
Watching all the mobsters go to a high school soccer game. I'm a high school soccer coach. I was a high school soccer coach for years, and that episode really kind of scared me a little bit because I'm like, my God, were my parents planning to kill me every time we lost a game?
Yeah, well, exactly.
The whole family.
And some of the things were like, oh, I don't like that coach. Go rough him up.
Yeah.
And it was like, and it was just awesome.
We're not going to let that coach leave. Rough him up.
Exactly. Well,
what about the old lady that was in the old folks' home with Polly's mother?
Yes,
that poor lady. It turns out she wasn't long for the world, but she didn't know that. and the kid in the bakery shop that wasn't serving Christopher, and then
Polly's mom not being Polly's mom.
That's true. Yes,
I mean that whole episode was mind blowing.
It's good stuff.
Oh yeah, they went really deep into these characters.
Especially the mother's a nun. I mean, really getting into the Catholic side of things and how we had to do stuff and keeping things in the family. If the priest misbehaves, we take care of it. It was again very, very ahead of its time.
Yeah, and this sort of like, it didn't do a whole lot of traditional mafia things, but it did really amplify and explore that like mafia code of justice thing. In ways that are outside the normal ways that media did, you know? And I thought that was really
fascinating. The closest thing you can compare it to with anything else I saw was Goodfellas. You know, handling how it was really an homage to Goodfellas. I mean, especially with the casting of the psychiatrist, you know, an homage to Goodfellas. But at the same time, it became its own thing and didn't stick with that we have to pace ourselves like a Goodfellas. It really became its own. And I really appreciated that about the show.
Oh, I could totally see that too, because it did have to pace itself, and it went through everyday life.
Uh-huh.
You got to see there was times where they were just hanging at the Bada Bing.
Yes.
And, you know, in the back room there, or, you know, they're sitting at the bar, or then at the butcher shop, you know, they're out in front. Some of those were some of the best scenes in the show.
Well, also how they handle family dynamic issues such as adultery, like how certain adulteries were okay, but if you went this far, it wasn't. And I mean, his relationship with his wife was a very dynamic is the word I keep using, but it was such a dynamic relationship, especially her relationship with the priest, and you just keep on moving. And it was just fascinating.
And I thought Edie Falco was just sort of the unheralded brick of the show.
Yes.
she's just, I've rewatched a couple to get ready for this, and I just picked random ones. I didn't like go through. Right. I just like, boom, right. And just, and every single one, she's really, really like strong and like, you know, she's like very strong in that sort of punch you in the face way, but at the same time, she's vulnerable. And I don't know how she did both at once, but it's something in television you just don't see.
Being emotionally vulnerable, but physically able to take care of herself.
You can't really, you know, in this particular era, you can't really think of a TV or a film.
House of Cards is the closest one with Robin Wright. I mean, that's the closest one I can come to.
And maybe Kerry Russell and the Americans, but we don't want to talk about that too much around Mike. But yeah, I mean, she really sort of set a trend with that, you know? And I think that those particular scenes with her and Tony, where she's like, Tony's blah, 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 blah. She's like, I know what you're doing, but she just plays along anyway. You just totally know that she's just like going through the motions with him, and she knows. It's really
beautiful. There was a lot of times I always felt like Carmela knew everything that was going on, no matter what.
I very much get that vibe that she sort of like knows.
Well, especially when they go and find all the guns, when they clean the house out, knowing that they're about to get raided, and they go and find everything, and she knows everything. I mean, she knows where everything is. It's
and that's when you kind of realize, wow, she is really in.
Yeah.
And the show also gave me new meaning into what ZD really is.
Yes. Know? Yes.
But the show also makes you not want to go to like Sbarro anymore and go to like your favorite local Italian.
No, you will get killed.
Yeah.
Or you'll get fed somebody.
Oh God. Yes. Well, and it's scary. Do you remember the episode where Christopher was showing that actor around?
Yeah.
And, you know, he was, you know, trying to explain it because the guy was researching it for.
Was that Ty Daly? Was that Daly that was, is that the one?
I thought it was Favreau.
Is it Favreau? It was Favreau. Okay, I'm thinking of the writer. I'm thinking of the writer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, Daly was the writer.
Right. I got mixed up for a minute. Yeah, it was Favreau. He was showing Favreau around. Yeah.
He was showing Favreau around.
That was fascinating.
And that was just awesome. And then we told him the story about the transvestite.
Yes.
And when Christopher found out that they were putting it into the movie.
Oh, it freaked him out. Oh, yeah.
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 And it's interesting because these guys went from everyday, soft, normal people to being some of the scariest MOs out there.
Well, Christopher. You talking about
Christopher was psycho. Christopher was a drug addict.
He was a drug addict. At first, though, he's just the kid that wants to impress Tony. He wants to impress his uncle/cousin. And you get into and especially when he gets involved with his girlfriend having turned state evidence. And just the cold-heartedness of it. I mean, I don't want to say I cried, but you're talking about being traumatized on how cold that was.
Oh, yeah. But then, you know, and Polly taking her out to the woods.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Polly scared the crap out of me.
Polly's one you didn't want to ride in the car with.
But I love Polly.
No.
You did not. When you got in the car with Polly, you were going to die.
Yes.
I think Polly was, in many ways, the only one that was absolutely unwielding and unwavering.
Family first.
Family first, you know, he is sort of the connection to if you want to connect the Sopranos sort of to the Godfather, he's the way you do it. And he's so, I think he's great. It's just, it's that weird humor that's like quirky, but also dark and strange at the same time.
But at the same time, and so just friendly.
He's like, hey, how you doing? Bang. Bang. You know, it's just, there's like, I don't want to be near that
guy. And who was Chris got into a fight with at the end? Who was it? Was it Polly? It was Chris and Polly that were the one fighting throughout it was fascinating.
Yeah, they had a few sort of rows that were interesting. But I also think that when you get back to Christopher, you get into sort of his path, the end of his arc, which I think is interesting too. That's a huge arc.
Oh, you know, and I think because he was pretty much domesticated by that point.
Uh-huh.
At the end. And he had the wife and, you know,
for a child. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then for him to die in a car accident.
Yeah.
Not even in a hit or something.
After all he had done.
Yeah. Because there was tons of times I thought Tony was going to off him.
I thought when he got hooked again, that was the death of Christopher. And because honestly, his wife dying the way all that went down blew my mind, and then for Tony to forgive all that and it's okay that she did these things, and then him to die in that car accident, you're going, what the heck just did I just watch?
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. And oh, that was just so horrifying where Tony cut off his breathing
mm-hmm.
in the car.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, oh, God. Ugh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's better for me to do this to you now because I was going to kill you anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. If you're squeamish, that's not a show to watch because there's plenty of times somebody's getting killed, you know, getting the beat down or somebody getting shot, and it's just kind of like, oh, ah.
You know, we talk about the ultra violence of it, but it was so episodic. Some episodes would have nothing in it. Mm-hmm. And then when you saw something come along, it's almost you could be ready for it. Like, this is going to be awful. This is going to be horrible. They're going to chop this guy up into meat. We're going to see this happen. And then next episode, we're dealing with his grandma and the issues that are going on at the nursing home.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Mm-hmm.
And even how we have these moments of just like really rough brutality that make you go, okay, this is on like, HBO. I get why right. this is on TV. But then, you know, they take Adriana in the woods and you don't see
right,
her shot.
Off screen. Yeah. Yeah, that whole, we don't know.
Which is the best, you know, again, one of the traits of science fiction
yes.
that they sort of brought. I don't think it's necessarily because of science fiction that they brought into this, but sort of like that idea that the best theater is the theater in your mind. The
it's
best
Jaws.
Theater of stories. Oh. Jaws. Yeah. Yes. Jaws. Yeah.
And then, when they have to kill one of their own, like Big Pussy, they did it respectfully. Yes. Everybody
on the boat.
On know, the boat, yes.
Yes. I mean all the minions and the runners and you know the business people that they took out, sometimes it'd be a sudden, like shocking level of violence, but then when they have to take out part of the family, you don't yeah. It's brutal in like a tender sort of way. It's
but it's
weird.
A we wine them and dine them first to celebrate them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's a weird sort of regret
yes.
to that scene. What I thought was interesting too about The Sopranos, they said that you know off camera when someone would get killed off the show, they would take that person out.
It's almost like they killed them too. Yeah.
They'd have like a huge dinner right. with them, right? Sort of send them off. And so you kind of knew something was going to happen to you if they all took you out to dinner.
Well, know? Also the fact that Tony never let a death not haunt him. I mean, think about how long, you know, the one after they killed him on the boat. That guy haunted him for the next, what, season, two seasons?
Yeah.
Was always popping well, yeah. back up in his head.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was great. You didn't even, there were times you thought, wait a minute, is Pussy still alive?
Yes.
And everything.
It was a flashback, but where he was a ghost in the scene, and it was really fascinating.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing when that would happen, and you would be looking at it and go, oh, wait a minute. And there were so many of it. But it was interesting, too, because you saw throughout the story, you know, a ton of betrayal. Hell, at the end of the first season, Tony's mom yes, put a hit on him,
Food Jr. I mean,
yeah. And it was just like, why? You know, and everyone, you know, it was just like, I almost expected for like the final episode, the whole family betraying each other. Or
yeah,
something.
Everybody's killing yeah. everybody.
Exactly.
AJ's got his gun.
AJ's got his gun. Meadows like walking in. Oh, the FBI, I called them.
Yeah,
they're going to be
yeah.
there. You know.
And then the mother's just going, gosh, kids, just put it away.
Exactly.
No, I think they handled a lot of topics in a very interesting way. The rape of the doctor. And
oh, God, yes.
Tell Tony, you know, who had done this. And, you know, and she's, you know, talking to her ex-husband about this. And how, I mean, they never really settled that.
Oh, it was amazing because she knew that if she told Tony.
He was dead. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and Tony finds the guy and doesn't yeah. kill him. He didn't kill him.
Well, he didn't know.
No, well, but he was certain, and you thought this guy's number has got to be up.
But he didn't want to cross that line with his doctor.
I nope. mean, nope, they, and I think they handled that well because just
oh, yeah.
maybe earlier season Tony might have, but
oh, definitely.
There had been enough character development and he had grown into the role of patient enough that he
that,
could calm himself down.
That and she was his conscience.
That's true. She absolutely
yes.
was in a way that nobody else could be.
Yeah, she could reach him when no one else could and walk him back from doing a lot of horrible things. Not everything. Not everything.
And he would.
And he would.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also appreciated that no matter how many different euphemisms that he would come up with to explain the business that he was in, she always saw through it and would call him on it,
yes,
but wouldn't push because she knew that there was such a thing as knowing too much, but she never actually fell for it. They just had this comfortable understanding that he was censoring everything he was saying, and that way she didn't have to worry about the consequences of what he was doing, for, you know, in case the police came in. Like it was like plausible deniability on a giant scale.
Well, that and the fact that, you know, some of the criticism the show gets is its treatment of women. And, you know, I like to argue that you have the psychiatrist, who's a very strong woman on the show. You have Edie Falco, who's the wife, plays, you know, in Meadow. You have some strong women. But at the same time,
think about it, add to that list Tony Soprano's mom.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. I was going to get to, I think the show had more issues with how to handle fathers. Because of the way Tony, you know, he revered his dad. But when you get in the flashbacks, you see his dad's kind of a goof-off. You don't really see how he knows how to handle it. You kind of think that the mom's kind of running the show from behind even then.
Yeah, she was kind of the mob boss without being
the mob boss.
She wasn't. And yet at the same time, she wasn't the puppet master. You just know that she was the brains behind the operation.
I think she was the muscle behind it. She was so mean.
She was
you're going to kill your own son?
Yeah, she was a terrible person.
She was not the mother of the year.
No.
But okay, when she died on the show, did they kill her before the actress died, or did they kill her off because the actress died?
They killed her off after the actress died.
And so that explains it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what they did, they actually used old clips of her.
Oh, okay.
And stuff they never aired.
And they handled that well. But then after his mother died, then they had his sister Janice step up and become a full-fledged character, where before that she was
a hippie flake.
She was goofy. And then, you know, when her boyfriend, you know, he hit her and she got revenge immediately.
Killed him.
She took him out in the kitchen?
Yes.
Oh.
Like it was nothing.
Janice may have called Tony to have him handle it, but by that point she had grown as a character enough that she was more than capable, and yet you still didn't expect it because she hadn't done anything like that yet.
Well, that's the other thing about the show, is that it never built up to an end. The show I never felt like the show was ever coming to an end. I'm watching the show and I'm going, okay, I'm finishing up seasons. I never felt like it was coming to an end to anything, you know, and especially when they involved with like the Russian mob and some of the Islamic terror that was going on. You're like, this show could just keep going. It's going to go on forever. The show
It can keep on reinventing itself.
Yes.
You're right. There was very little finality to most of it. And you know what? You think that's kind of how real life is.
Exactly.
Because nothing is ever truly completely wrapped up
until you're dead.
Exactly. You don't know when an issue is going to come back up later, or something.
Right.
You know what's that? You know, life's what happens when you're busy making other plans. Thank you, John Lennon. It's true, because you don't know what to expect out of life. And with this show, you'd think, oh, that storyline is tied up, but then it comes back in a big way later. It doesn't come back the way you would have expected it to come back. Well,
especially with Junior's dementia and how they handled that. Was that real? Was he faking it?
And how well that actor pulled that off.
Oh, my gosh. And then you find out it is real, and then it's not real.
And then, you know, now I've been witness to it. My grandfather, I watched his dementia, and I watched his dementia become Alzheimer's. And I've seen the horror of what it's that horrible. Does to people. Yes. And his portrayal of it. In fact, there were, at the time that was happening on the show, it was also happening with my grandfather. So there were episodes that for a long time I couldn't actually watch, and I had to go back. And But going back afterwards, mm-hmm. after my grandfather was gone, you know, he had a myriad of health problems, and I don't really know. That was just one of them. I don't really know what actually took him out. But watching those episodes later, that actor embodied it so well that I just think, you know what? He must have been witnessed to somebody who was being ravaged by Alzheimer's,
right,
to understand it at that kind of a level.
Oh, the details we went into each person's histories and how they acted them out.
Addiction.
Yeah.
How they handled Chris's addiction. I mean, he's not my favorite.
His multiple addictions.
His multiple addictions, but it's so true, though, with addiction. It's how easy it is to relapse, how easy it is to get into these things, and how little treatment there really is.
And, you know, now, I personally, I have never suffered addiction, but there's people in my family that have.
Right.
Never narcotics or any. It was all alcoholism, but I've seen it, and I've seen how the relapses happen, and not to the degree that you see on that show sometimes, thankfully.
Right, of course.
There's other shows I've watched that have dealt with addiction too, and it's always horrible, but they handled it well on that show by showing, yep, this is what happens with addiction, and there's only so much help that they can get from the outside, and some of it has to come from the inside.
And also a level of compassion you don't expect.
Exactly.
You're right. It never portrayed him as being a horrible person.
For being addicted.
It portrayed him as,
an idiot.
The addiction that was making his problems far worse.
Yep.
Oh, it did in points and such. When he was working with Tim Daly, like you had mentioned earlier, and what he ended up doing with the screenwriter, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, that's true.
Yeah. Well, what about that? Christopher was an idiot.
Yeah.
Well, Christopher was just a complete moron, though. His addiction just, it was, you know, amplified that.
Exactly.
But it was interesting how they made him sort of an interesting way to play off the protagonist in every single season that he's in.
Yes.
He is always, in some way, shape, or form, sort of like
ruining Tony's life.
He sort of calls a lot of Tony's stuff into value and into play, but he also does it in a way that's not obvious. He's also kind of like this point where Tony starts to sort of think about his actions sort of through him sometimes. And I think that's really an interesting way to explore your lead characters, to, you know, sort of siphon it through the supporting players. It's an ensemble cast, but sort of everybody else sort of going through their own problems sort of fleshes out the main character. And I think that's incredibly compelling.
Look how early they were on certain issues such as Columbus Day. And how, I mean, you know, I was in school during this time I was teaching. I don't remember Columbus Day ever being this controversy until kind of after the show. And how New Yorkers and Italians handled Columbus Day and how it became this Indigenous People's Day and the fight there and how early on that was brought in by this show.
No, true. And that was kind of some of the interesting stuff. They were not afraid to tackle different issues.
No.
And if you remember towards the end of the series and such, when they, you know, were trying to, you know, they were at war with the New York family and the New Jersey family.
And the Italians.
And the Italians and, you know, the folks from Italy. And they brought in the enforcer from Italy and everything.
Oh, man, what a good character there.
Yeah, and it was just awesome. And then, you know, having the enforcer fall in love with Carmella.
Yes.
And he realized that he was screwed if he stayed, so he went back to Italy.
Well, you know, I had traveled to Rome this summer kind of after I'd watched the show and was kind of looking at some of the areas they had traveled to and, you know, went to Capri and saw these things. But it's really fascinating how they were treated by the Italians, by the Italian families, as if you're just kind of dogs. You're not even worth our time.
You're like the pale comparison to us.
We're really what you want to be, but you're not.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was kind of like even the tears of how bigotry within the families that there is. Like, the New York and the New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. It's a class. It's very much a class system within.
Oh yes. Yeah.
A system. And what's interesting too is sort of like the older generations are way more revered as being viable, sort of this. Yeah, they knew what they were doing. They're old school, but the new kids, they're just kids, you know?
Yeah, even 50-year-old Tony, he's just a kid.
You know, especially with the drugs thing, because the original mafia, you know, drugs. Oh, no. You know, there's certain, that old school mafia, there's certain things you just don't do, right? And then
exactly.
As time goes on and they get more integrated into the American culture, it's like, oh, we can make money this way. We can make money this way. You can see, and there's a theme, again, that goes back into The Americans and some other shows later, sort of taking things that are around them currently, like, well, we weren't supposed to do this, but we're going to do it.
Well, also the legitimization of everything. Like, they were involved with legitimate businesses to such a level where Tony had an office at that garbage processor, and all his job was
there. Oh my God, that episode when he went there.
Yes.
And he says, I'm here because the FBI was watching him. So he had to go look like he was working.
Right.
He went and said, I'm here for my office. And it was the storage room.
Yep. And they're cleaning it out, getting it ready, and just
getting it ready for him and everything. Cause he was like, well,
I've got to be working.
I got to be working. And then he has ended up banging the receptionist.
Yes. God. Again, though, it's so funny that, you know, the aspect of Catholicism in there, but yet the separation, Tony the mobster is not the same person as Tony the homemaker. And
oh no, not at all.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The episode when it was towards the end, you know, they were trying to get money and everything, and they started, you know, let's go into town and shake up some of the businesses. And they went to the coffee place, and they were like, we can't give you any money. And he said, don't you know who we are? He says, yeah, I know who you are, but each cup we have here is accounted for. Uh-huh. Every penny is accounted for. If I gave you money, I would be out of a job and somebody else would be here tomorrow.
Right.
That's how,
because corporatization beat it. Corporatization
exactly.
Beating out the mob. Yeah.
Exactly. And it was just like, oh my God, that's going to be the death of the mob and everything. It was like, cause they found it.
Well, they were looking for other scams. You know, they were looking for the online scams. They were trying to do that. They were trying to get into almost into the game late on things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They were almost like they were the dinosaurs.
Yep. Yep.
And so it was kind of crazy, folks. It was really kind of crazy.
Well, you know, one of the things I appreciated, is that the show, it shows these people doing these awful things, and it shows them with some sympathy, but it never actually condones it. It never actually says this is okay. It basically makes a case for there's people like this in the world, but it's not actually okay. It's entertaining, but it never glorifies it. It never makes it seem like, hey, that's something I want to do.
It made you feel sorry for the families.
Yes.
It never glorified it.
No.
It didn't don't you want to be a gangsta?
Yeah,
you
know,
they didn't do that in the family because they kept trying to keep AJ and Meadow out of it.
Yeah, and that's why I like the episode where Meadow finally puts it all together and tells her brother, and then they confront the parents, but the parents are never the parents just basically say, stay out of it. You know, and they weren't saying stay out of it because we don't want you to know. It was stay out of it because this is not the life you want.
No,
exactly.
It was kind of like in The Godfather, we wanted to keep Michael out of it, you know, and so we're going to keep our kids out of it. And, you know, they did successfully keep Meadow and AJ pretty much out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. They never fell into it. I mean, they could have easily, but
yeah.
AJ tried so hard.
Yeah. He wanted to be, and then he realized, and then, you know, even his own father realized, nope, he doesn't have what it takes. And then he was kind of proud of him for that.
Yep.
That was the great thing about it, is it felt like real life. It didn't glorify. And in a lot of ways, I really thought that each one of them was going to get their own. Because especially with the final season, they started offing people left and right.
Yes.
Especially with the gang.
Well, especially the family. I mean, everybody was going. I mean, you know, everybody's dying.
Especially when they gunned down Silvio in the parking lot of the Bada Bing.
Yeah.
And at the end, he was on life support. They weren't sure if he was going to make it or not. And it was just like, and then the final. And it was just, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. It was so tense and everything.
You're on the run.
Exactly. And you just don't know what's going to happen. And that was the great thing about the show.
I think I read the other day, I saw some casting news about a Sopranos movie, and the little bit that I read said that thing takes place in the 60s. It's like it's not going to be a flashback so much as it's actually going to show.
No, it's a prequel. It's going to be a prequel.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's gonna show the family at an earlier time, and I think it's actually, I think they said Kid Tony's going to be in it, but the movie's going to focus on his father and his
probably
mother,
Uncle Junior.
So and Uncle Junior. So that should be interesting.
I don't think it's. I don't know if it's a movie or no,
I think it's an HBO movie. I think it's like Deadwood where it's, but I don't know. I mean, I know David Chase is writing the movie, so at least you know it's going to be done well because, you know, it was his creation. He's doing the story, so you don't have to worry about it feeling like, you know.
Said the
like
same thing about George Lucas. Okay.
That's weird. Okay.
You were in New Jersey, yeah. So.
Yeah, well, duh, yeah. And it's kind of interesting because I've actually been to a few of the places where they actually filmed the show. So it's kind of cool, you know, to actually be able to go, because right on Route 17 is the Bada Bing where it's the real place. And, you know, you could also go into where the meat market was. And, you know, there's different places and a lot of folks – cousins of mine who are live up in New Jersey. Oh, I know where Tony Soprano's house is. I take you there.
There we go.
You
know,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And I think Alan Taylor, who did some stuff with Game of Thrones, is directing it.
Oh, oh awesome.
Okay. So that comes full circle. Yes. But what's interesting about Newark, by setting it in the mid-60s, is they had a lot of stuff going on in Newark in the 60s that's sort of ripe for that mindset to take hold. I think, and I might be wrong, but I think Newark had race riots, and I think they had really big labor issues.
I think the race riots though were later in the 60s.
Yeah, but you had the labor issues all through the 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, God,
yeah. I think it's set in 66 or 67.
Oh, you're having the race issues mixed up with the labor issues. That's going to get really entertaining then.
So I think it's, you know, you see a lot of the seeds getting planted for
I can see
later.
Junior and his dad being those who are busting up, but starting race riots and trying to end union strikes.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see what happens. Yeah. All right. One final question, folks. Would you recommend this to other people?
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going in.
Hey everybody, this is Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment. We're just halfway through January and some people are saying that the concert event of the year is already in the books. I Am the Highway, a tribute to Chris Cornell, happened last Wednesday the 16th at the Forum in LA. It was organized by his widow Vicky for charity, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel, had tons of amazing performances. Peter Frampton backed up Brandi Carlile and Black Hole Sun. There were members, of course, of Soundgarden, Audioslave, also Metallica, Nirvana, Foo Fighters, because you can't do anything without Dave Grohl. A lot of these performances are posted online. You can check them out. Hopefully there'll be a home release in the works. Also, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee to be as a member of Roxy Music, Brian Ferry is going on a solo tour and including a North American leg. I don't think he's been on the road, at least in North America, for a while, so this is definitely an event. Starts late July in Toronto, ends up late September in Vancouver, and I don't know if he's playing it in its entirety, but the spotlight is their iconic album, Avalon. He also promises a few of his solo hits and a few Roxy hits, so you could probably hear Love is the Drug in there also. And also, finally, an artist named Max Seidentopf really loves Toto. And he has created an installation in the desert of Namibia in Africa. 7 white acrylic platforms bearing 6 speakers and an MP3 player loaded with 1 song. You want to guess what song that is? Yes. It's run on solar batteries, so theoretically, I don't know about wind and sun damage, but theoretically it will play Africa in Africa 24/7, 365 for all eternity. Somebody had to do it, I guess. You could check it out at totoforever.com. There is a link at my blog, iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com. That is all for now, and we will catch you next time.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards. For the week of January 20th, 2019, it's the ESO Network Con Report.
Howdy, everyone. And here are some events that you can see ESO Network folks at for January and February. There's not a lot. We're still in the beginning of convention season, so things are a little bit slow into convention scene. But there are some ones coming up next weekend. January 25th through the 27th is Chattacon, and that is in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The Vitamin Geeks, Corey, will be there, and he'll be on a couple panels, so you want to check that out if you are in the Chattanooga area. It's a great convention. It's a science fiction fantasy convention. I think it's a little bit more literary-based as well, but Corey will be representing some horror panels, I believe. And then also on the 27th here in the Atlanta area is the one-day Atlanta Comic Convention show. Yeah, usually this is done the same day as the Super Bowl, or I'm sorry, the big game. But since the big game is here in the ATL in a couple weeks, all the hotels need their space. The space is at a premium that weekend. So the Atlanta Comic Convention has moved their one-day show to the week before. So it's going to be January 27th. It's going to be all the same vendors, a lot of folks that we know, creators, friend of the station, Bobby Nash, will be there. So it's still going to be it's usually a great turnout. So hopefully the fact that it's not on the day of the big game means that we'll still get a good turnout. So it's always a fun show to be a part of. And Mike and I will be at that show. We don't have a table, but we'll be wandering around and looking for deals and wanting to say howdy to people and just visiting. So if you're going to go, reach out to us. And then finally, in February, this 15th through the 17th, is Inuhele. It is a Tiki weekend here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I will be there along with Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler, and we'll be getting our Tiki on that show. So that's all the shows for the next couple weeks or the next couple months. So if you've got a show that you want to promote or just want to rave about, please let us know, because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank my guests for joining me tonight. Will, you made it through an episode with us.
I did. I loved it and hope to get to come back.
Oh, sure. Anytime, my friend.
All right.
Anything you want to shout out about?
I would. I'd like people to follow The Geeky Side. We're on Facebook at The Geeky Side of Life and on Twitter at The Geeky Side, and our podcast, The Geeky Side, with my co-host Tyra Burton. Love to have everybody listen. We talk about a little bit of everything, and can't wait to be back on here, Mike.
We'll have a link to it up on our show notes.
Appreciate it, man.
Definitely check them out. It's a great show, folks. And Will is just entertaining, as you could tell, tonight. And he doesn't know when to keep his mouth shut sometimes, so it's even better.
Sorry.
So, and Rob, thank you, my friend.
No, thanks. It was good to do this.
It was a lot of fun, and I want to do a shout-out real quick.
Yeah, so I do a lot of stuff with newcoffee.com, kind of on their site and their podcast and their social media and all that stuff. Also, the Dragon Con Brit Media track, I post stuff there on American Sci-Fi. So Facebook's a pretty good place to find me. And also on Twitter, it's Rob_Levy on Twitter, and just my name on Facebook as well. Those are probably the two easiest ways to track me down.
That is awesome. And JD, it was great having you back on the show, my friend.
Yeah, it was really nice to be back on the show. I shouldn't wait 14 years next time to come back. Because, yeah, I, well, and you can find me on Facebook. And under JD Onassi, and I'm on the ESO Facebook group, and sometimes I have snide comments, and sometimes I have, you know, honest comments. But
he does actually give honest comments sometimes, and not just
honestly snide.
Exactly.
What's Twitter exactly? Yeah, I don't use it. I can't. I can't multitask, and I can only keep up with so many, so many different ways to. Read people's negative comments about, everything. So, thanks for having me on the show. This is awesome.
No, it was great to talk to all three of you guys. And of course, Mike Gordon, who was on the show earlier, thank you for everything as always. And of course he would say, as always, it's my pleasure. Of course, you could also help, Earth Station One by supporting our Patreon. And I'm very happy to announce that there's going to be a brand new show joining the ESO network, but it's only available to Patreon subscribers at the $10 level. Starting this next month of February, you're going to be hearing it first here. We are going to be having ESO Network Riff. And we are going to be riffing on your favorite TV shows and favorite movies once a month. And it'll be friends of the show, friends of the network, friends of other shows, like Will can join us if he wanted to.
Love it.
Or JD could join us, or Rob could join us. Anyone could join us to do a riff.
You'll never know. You'll have to tune in.
Exactly. You'll have to tune in to see who does it. And I am very happy to announce that our very first episode is going to be to celebrate an anniversary year. We're going to be doing the Michael Keaton Batman.
Oh, yeah. Good.
We have never talked about it here on Earth Station One, and a couple of the shows might have talked about it on the network, but we are going to be doing Batman. So if you guys want to listen to it, you have to be a subscriber to Patreon.
Still the best Batman movie ever.
And so,
I love the idea of making Batman Beyond. With Keaton.
Oh, Keaton, that would be perfect. That would be so perfect.
Somebody needs to capitalize on that.
Yeah, Kevin Smith, Kevin Smith just talked about that and saying DC is missing a gold mine right there.
Well, and didn't Michael Keaton, I don't know, I think last year.
Yeah,
didn't he already say, well, I'm in. It's kind of like, get on this
show. Exactly, so. But yep. It's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens with it. So you never know. We're going to be doing stuff like this, like talking just like we just did here on the podcast. So, join us for, the new show, ESO Network Riff. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. That's all it takes. And you could subscribe to and help support the network for as little as 25 cents a week. That's not that bad. So definitely, but if you want to hear the shows, and especially the original content, you have to donate a little more. But, we love giving you free content. But, we need new microphones. We need a new mixing board. We need pay for new hosting. It all comes out somehow. And, we're growing and we do need your help. And thank you for everyone who has been supporting the ESO Network on our Patreon. It's been fantastic. So definitely, folks, we would love to, we're giving you original entertainment even more so now. So ESO Network Riffs. That's pretty darn awesome. All right. My shout out real quick is going out to the Super Bowl because I'm not going to watch it. So this is the only time I'm going to mention it here. So, here in Atlanta is going to be the Super Bowl. The New England Patriots, who I know Mike Gordon likes, yawn. They're going to be going in it again against the Los Angeles Rams. So I think they're Los Angeles this week. I think they were St. Louis. They were who knows where they are. So
don't never ever mention the Rams to anyone from St.
Louis. Sorry, I know that's
it'll be like a Sopranos episode if you do.
Oh, that was the Cardinals. I mean.
No, sorry.
The Cardinals never said, hey, we're going to stay and listen to your stadium proposal and then basically don't and then leave in the middle of the night. So, yes.
I understand. I'm sorry. I didn't even mean to hit that.
No. It's totally fine.
So, I assume you're not going to be watching it either. So, it's okay.
It's cathartic to do something else because there's so many other things the NFL does weird that you shouldn't pay any attention anyway. That, Mike, you have a whole arsenal of podcasts. People could spend all the time. that they'd spend in the Super Bowl listening to archive podcasts, new podcasts, or buying stuff on Amazon you talk about on the show. The other thing you could do is, you know, watch the commercials online later.
Exactly. I think I'd rather watch paint dry, truthfully, but that's okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, I might watch it, but I'll be cheering for the Houston Oilers the whole time. So
I want to know what he's drinking at his house.
That's why he's in the airlock, my friend.
Yeah, so I can dry out. Woo!
Exactly. 14 years later.
Exactly. All right, folks, we'll be back again next week. We'll still be probably talking about The Sopranos because we didn't even touch the surface of the show.
Oh, my God.
We had so much we could talk about. But next week, we're going to be doing our ESO book club, Mission of Gravity by Hal Clement. So Kirby will be joining us once again, and we will be doing the book. So if you want to get started reading, you could join us too. Until then, my name is Mike Faber. We will talk to you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace, and we are done. Boom. You've been listening to the Earth Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.